Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. I'm very excited to introduce my friend and a fellow teacher today, Shelley Clark, who is in Butte, Montana, although she used to live up here in Eureka near me. So welcome to the show, Shelley.
Hey, Jackie. It was really nice to get connected with you again. Thanks a lot.
Well, cool. Well, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Jackie, my husband and I are both natives of Wisconsin. We both grew up in central and northern Wisconsin. And in 2002, I don't know if it was a midlife crisis or what it was, but we decided we needed change, and we moved to Montana in 2002. We've lived in Superior and up in Eureka, and now we live in Butte. We've been in Montana for 13 years. Last spring, I retired from public school teaching after a 30-year career in music education, and I'm now retooled. I don't like the word retired. I'm retooled in Butte, and I teach music in a private studio, and I do some freelance musician work, and obviously I do some gardening, too.
Oh, I like that. And I like that term, retooled, instead of retired, because...
It kind of just sounds too much like a rocking chair, and that doesn't sound too much like me.
Although it is nice to sit in the garden sometimes.
Oh, it sure is. It is. It's nice to sit out there because the plants won't talk back.
Spoken like a true teacher. All right.
Yes.
So, Shelley, I always like to start the show out by asking everybody about their very first gardening experience. Like, how old were you? Were you a kid, an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, tell us about your very first gardening memory.
My gardening experience was with my grandfather, and I recall probably around age kindergarten. He was an organic gardener before it was cool to be an organic gardener. And I remember one of my first jobs was to lay lime down because in Wisconsin the soil is very acidic, so you needed lime to neutralize. And I graduated to planting beans and corn, and he showed me how to measure using my hand the distance between the seeds and the rows. He also made special markings on shovel handles for me, so I knew how to dig rows. I remember planting corn. He had a special shovel handle with the marking of the distance between the rows. And he had, like, I bet you he had an acre of garden in this little town. He gave most of it away when it produced. And I always remember in the fall, when he'd clear out the corn stalks and all the old plants, we'd always have a big bonfire. And we'd roast hot dogs and marshmallows. So those are really good memories for me.
Aw, that's sweet. I like that.
I know.
I know, and I like to encourage listeners, you know, if your kids are giving you a little bit of resistance and maybe they don't want to be in the garden, most of my guests have said that they remember those fond memories with their grandparents or their parents. And so, you know, just keep sharing your passion, and you might be surprised later as an adult that they say, oh, yeah, I remember that time that we, you know, measured the corn or picked the beans and planted or brought in strawberries and things. So excellent. Okay. What does organic gardening or like earth friendly gardening mean to you?
Well, it probably means more to me now than it did even 10 years ago. You know, I've had some health issues. I'm a cancer survivor.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just more aware of the type of food I eat now. My husband and I noticed that our garden produce tastes so much better than the items we find in the markets. I like knowing where my vegetables come from, and even when we're not growing vegetables here, we go to farmers markets in the area and we talk to the people that grow the items. So we have a knowledge of where our food comes from. I also think gardening is kind of a duty to being accountable to nature. We're given so much. The earth gives us so much. And for us to give back to it by this cooperative production that we do with gardening, I think it makes us aware of that having just enough is enough for abundance for us. We don't have to have a mass marketed food supply. You know, if we can grow what we need and maybe give away some, that's just enough for us.
Oh, I like that a lot. That's really sweet. Okay, how about who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques? Was it your grandfather or?
I'm guessing it was, because that's all we ever really knew. Huh? We don't use pesticides on our garden. I try to use products like compost and manure. Mm-hmm. And one of my gardening friends, put me onto Epsom salts for additional nutrients, especially like for tomatoes and cucumbers, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah. Well, she had told me that when you transplant tomatoes, oftentimes there's a wilt that will happen with a transplant. Mm-hmm. And she said the Epsom salts provide extra magnesium that helps basically the cellular components of the plant to do better in transplanting. So I started, they suggest, you know, 1 or 2 tablespoons per gallon of water. You can just sprinkle it on lightly around the base of the plants. And I just transplanted some tomatoes just a few days ago and did that, and there's been no wilt whatsoever. So Ooh. I passed that on.
All right. I like that. So then how'd you learn how to garden organically?
Well, of course, I had good roots with my grandfather, but over the years, I've had friends, especially up in Eureka area, where organic gardening is, you know, really the preferred method, and exchange knowledge with them. So primarily word of mouth with friends.
Okay, cool. And maybe I can get some names from you after we're done for some other people I could interview for the show.
Oh, yes. Sure. Absolutely.
Cool. How
you've
about...
Already, you've already... Yeah. Go ahead.
I've already got a few of them. How about... tell us about something that grew well, like, last year. You know, last season.
Well,
last summer.
This is interesting because this is the first year I've had this garden
plot. Oh, right.
We bought our home in January when there was snow on the ground. Really did not know what was out there, but as it turns out, the people that owned this house, the wife was a master gardener.
Oh, wow.
And she had some wonderful treasures in store for us this spring. We have a rhubarb plot, and she had started some raspberries and some herbs. She was primarily a perennial flower grower, and my grandfather always said, you can't eat flowers. So he was a vegetable gardener, and, you know, I'm primarily a vegetable gardener. I know a little bit about flowers, but not as much as vegetables. So, you know, the soil seemed to be enriched very well for this area. We tend to have alkaline soil like most of Montana does. And it was enriched with bark and compost. So I didn't have to do much with the soil this spring. And so it's kind of a crapshoot this year, trying to see what's going on. But, you know, everything I've put in the ground is up out of the ground, and it seems to be doing well. So I'm very hopeful it'll be a good year. And maybe in a future interview, I can tell you what's growing well. It appears right now the green leafy vegetables thrive very well here, as well as cabbage.
Oh, okay. How about something you're excited to try or something you're excited to do new?
Well, there's a couple of things. I want to start more plants indoors. I haven't done much of that in the past. I usually rely on greenhouses or friends to start plants for me. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to experiment with that. I'd like to start working with growing a vertical garden. I live in the city and don't have a lot of land space for a traditional horizontal garden. So I'd like to start growing my garden up using trellises and, you know, maybe some raised beds.
Mm-hmm. I just ordered Mike that book this morning, actually. One of my guests had recommended it. That's called, is it How to Extend Your Season? Or I'll have to look it up. But something about extending your season. I think it was Megan Kane out in Wisconsin who recommended it.
Oh, okay.
Although it could have been Linda Shanahan from Pennsylvania. It was one of those two women that were just on recently. And They really rec, and so I thought I'm gonna get that book to inspire us a little more and see about if we can learn some techniques for extending our season. I mean, Mike plastics in our porch and makes like kind of like a little greenhouse out there that I was
Right.
looking in the journal the other day and he had 750 starts in there 1 year, like a few years ago. So this year there's probably about, I don't know, 150 or something, eggplants and peppers and tomatoes and marigolds and things. But yeah, he's quite the starter sometimes. So, well,
That's
that's
awesome.
interesting. So you haven't realized you're going to learn about perennials. My guess number 50,
I'm going to learn
David
about.
grows a lot of perennials, talked a lot about perennial landscaping. And that's what I want to be, is like a flower farmer. I leave the vegetables to Mike and I'm into the flowers. But he certainly has grown a lot of flowers.
Perennials is like visiting a new country for me because
Oh.
even the names of the flowers are strange to me.
I think you'll
I
like
just.
it though, because the cool thing about perennials, when Mike first introduced them to me, was that you don't have to plant them every year. They come back on their own, and they're just really beautiful. You get some really just like nice blooms, and I just think perennials are the way to go. And they spread like crazy, so you get more, you don't have to keep reinvesting that your money, everything's growing.
They are very sturdy, that's for sure.
So I think you're going to find you like the perennials. How about something that didn't work so well? I don't know.
Well, again, we're not sure yet. I'm going to suspect it's going to have to do with cucumbers, though. My cucumber start, I did start cucumbers in the house that, and got some pretty good starts on them. I'm growing my cucumbers in pots. I'm using the bush variety this year. And it's just cucumbers, I've never had really good luck with growing cucumbers. It's either too dry or too wet or something. And but I've never grown them in the big pots before. So I'm going to try that and see if I have luck with them. So hopefully I will.
Okay. Well, yeah, it'd be fun to talk to you in the fall and see how things went in your new habitat down there. So I know I'm always amazed when Mike can like put a cucumber seed in the ground and then he grows the plant and then there's the cucumbers. And I just opened pickles last night that were so good.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Okay, how about something you find is easy to grow and generally successful every time? And you could talk about something from a peer then maybe.
When we lived in Eureka, we lived right at the border,
Oh,
and
you
I don't
did?
know what it was about the soil, but we could grow cabbage like crazy. It was
Really?
like magic soil up there. And my cabbages down here are doing very well too, so apparently that must be my. That must be the plant that I channel is cabbage. Salad greens generally go well too. Of course, the soil in Montana seems to do well with those plants. We get the wet, cool springs and the alkaline soil. So I think greens do very well here in Montana.
Yes, I do too. Now, what kind of greens do you plant? Kale? I've never planted kale before, and after doing the podcast, I'm going to try kale this year. Is that one of your greens?
I did plant kale. I plant lettuce, spinach, kale, and then this year I started Swiss chard. I've never grown
Ooh.
Swiss chard.
Oh, you're gonna like that. I love Swiss chard. I like the
Bok choy. I'm
rainbow
trying
chard.
bok choy.
Bok
Oh
choy.
yes, the
Oh.
rainbow chard.
I
Yeah.
haven't grown the bok. I haven't grown bok choy. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the regular plain white Swiss chard. I like the red or the yellow.
That's what I'm
So I like that
growing. Yes,
rainbow
the
chard.
red.
But I like to eat that just like celery. I'll eat like the stalks with like dip with like celery and stuff and then and then I cook it and I just use it like spinach. I love Swiss chard. It's one of my favorites. I use that a ton.
Well, I haven't really eaten Swiss chard, but I like all those type of greens, and I like the fact that it's a bulkier green. When you stir fry it or cook it, it's going to have a little body to it. So.
Right? Yep. And if you just, cut those little the stems up just nice and tiny and maybe kind of peel them like you peel the celery, the back off the celery stalk because they can be have that kind of stringy thing. But yeah, they're good in
Right.
stir fry. They're good in everything. You know what I put Swiss chard in is lasagna. I make like vegetable lasagna and I'll put like Swiss chard in there or the spinach.
Oh, wow. That's a great idea.
Yeah. just yeah, that works really good. I can use Swiss chard in almost anything. I love it with eggs. I love it with just on a regular salad. Swiss chard's one of my favorites. And what kills me is like you go to the store and you see how expensive it is. And I'm just flabbergasted, you know, like $3, $4 for a bunch of Swiss chard. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, should grow that. That's
It's
something I've thought
already
about
doing it.
if we were gonna grow something during the winter. I think Swiss chard would be one of mine.
Yeah. And you know, kale would do pretty well too. You can sow kale pretty early, almost as early as long as the snow is off the soil, it seems to do okay. So, something
Yeah,
to
that's what
try.
I've been hearing. People say kale is like just like the wonder green to grow because they said that it lasts through the summer, the hot summers where the lettuce will bolt more. They said the kale sticks around. So I bought a packet of kale. Mike just put it in the ground the other day, I think, even. So we'll see how that goes. How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in Montana?
Well, in particular, I live in basically an alpine desert where, you know, we're at a mile high and lots of rock, and you know, corn would not do well here. There's not enough rain. Melons, I know people who try to grow melons here, but I think the season's too short. You know, when you're living up in the on the Continental Divide, you're pretty much looking at plants with, you know, 60, 65-day growing periods, because you can have here in Butte, they can have frost almost any month of the year. So you have to be melons really need a long growing season, and for corn, I think it's a moisture issue more than anything.
Wow, I didn't realize. So Butte's at like over 5,000 feet. Did you say
Oh
it was a
yeah.
mile high?
Oh, we're yeah, in some places more than a mile high. Both Anaconda and Butte, which are about 20 miles apart, are over, you know, we're mile high here, yes.
Oh wow, I didn't realize that. Okay. And dry. Yep, definitely dry over there. Don't you miss the trees? I don't think I could ever live in Butte. My stepdaughter lives in Butte. I don't know. She likes
But
it.
you
I
know,
the
it's
house,
that
you know,
kind
there's some
of
cool stuff there. Sorry.
It's deceiving because only 5 minutes out of Butte, you're in the Beaverhead National Forest, which is up on Home State Pass, and there's trees up there. You know, unless you get off the interstate, you really don't really know Butte until you get off the
Right.
interstate,
I know. She
because there are
showed me
really a
around
lot
and
of
I could
really great
see.
things.
I could see how she fell in love with it. I was surprised. But lots of neat buildings and architecture and
Oh yeah,
houses
big
and the old.
history.
Yep. Okay. What's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something you got to force yourself to get out there and do?
Yes, I have a habit of sowing seeds heavily because I've always lived in climates where frost is issues, and I always felt there's strength in numbers. And I know you're supposed to probably sow your seeds a little lighter, but I sow heavily. So I end up having to thin plants, and I really don't like to thin plants out. It's just I'm always worried I'm going to disturb a really good plant, and I think, well, that's kind of a waste of plants when I have to thin them out. But they don't really grow well unless you do. So I would say thinning out plants after sowing is probably my least favorite activity.
That's so funny. The lady I just had on said the exact same thing. The one I interviewed right before you, that's going to be episode 51. She said she and I was agreeing with her that to me carrots are the hardest because the seeds are so tiny and they're so hard
Right.
to spread out. That's another reason my goal this year is to plant 750 sunflowers, I think, and harvest 2,000 sunflowers. And another reason I pick sunflowers is because the seeds are so big and they're so much easier to plant than like carrots would be
Right.
a nightmare. So, and
Well,
I
this
know
year
it's
I took, yeah. Go ahead.
thinning's tough. Beets are a little easier for me to thin because you can use the beet greens, but carrots
Right.
are a tough one. I know, and you always feel bad. But then if you don't, then you waste everything because nothing grows. So you got to kind of.
One of the things that was suggested to me was to sow my carrots with my radish seeds. So I bought 2 packets of radish seeds to 1 package of carrot seeds. And I put them all in an old spice jar that has, you know, the holes in the top.
Oh.
And I broadcast them. I didn't plant them in rows. I just took like a square section of my garden, and I broadcast them just in a square plot. Because by doing that with the seeds and broadcasting, it should spread the carrots out a little bit more. And I could still harvest the radishes early and then get those out of there before the carrots mature. So we'll see how that works.
Okay. Oh, I'm curious to see that. We have radishes. We've been eating radishes all week. Mike grew some monster radishes this year. What was I going to say? One year I bought this little thing, and it was like, it was supposed to like separate the seeds, and you like pushed a button and it would push out like one carrot seed or two carrot seeds at a time and stuff. But that
I've
just,
seen those. Do they work?
Nah, not really. Cause I just got, it took forever. So I just end up getting frustrated and being like, no, I can't do this either. I tell Mike, I'm like, go get the grandkids. They're good at this and their hands are tiny. They can spread them out better. That works pretty good if they're around. And, but yeah, carrots are just, always end up with a huge pile all clumped together. And then what is Mike will like transplant some things when they're squished together too much. I can't really remember right now what he's transplanted before, but some things that have amazed me, if it's beets or there was just something that he transplanted one year and I was like, wow, romaine lettuce. He can transplant romaine lettuce.
Oh, wow.
Crazy. Yeah. So if it gets too close, so there's always that option. Try to move them. How about your favorite activity to do in the garden? What do you love to get out there and do?
This is going to sound funny, but I call it plant hygiene. I like to go out and pick off like the old leaves. And, you know, when the tomatoes start coming to get those sucker blossoms off so that the energy goes back into the tomatoes. I just know I've never had a lot of problem with pests, and I think a lot of it has to do with getting rid of that old or wilted vegetation that's near the plant. So I call it plant hygiene. And I also really love cleaning my garden at the end of the season. I like the fact that it's kind of a closure activity, and knowing that I'll have a nice garden ready for the spring and I don't have to clean it in the spring. So anyway, that's kind of my favorite thing to do. Of course, eating the produce is awesome too, but
that's cool. Tell us a little more about the sucker blossoms on the tomatoes.
Okay, so when the tomato plants start to blossom early on, those blossoms, of course, are going to produce your tomatoes. But once your tomatoes start setting fruit, if there's blossoms beyond that point, they should be pinched off. So the energy of the growing goes into the tomatoes that are set rather than into the plant itself. So my tomatoes usually get a haircut when my tomatoes start forming. Even when they start forming about an inch in diameter, I start clipping off all of those other blossoms because by that point, they're not going to probably set fruit much anymore, and they're just taking energy out of the tomato. Plus, getting that extra foliage out is going to allow the sun to get deep into that plant so those tomatoes will ripen in time.
Cool. All right. I like those tips. I think gardeners are going to really like that part. How about, tell us about the best crop you ever grew. Was there one year that something was just so prolific you couldn't do anything with all the produce you had and didn't know what to do with it all?
I would say it was probably in Eureka, the best crop of cabbages we had. We could grow cabbages like they were magic. And they didn't have any bugs in them. There were no flies, no moths. And I think everybody in our neighborhood got cabbage from us that year. We always had good cabbage up in Eureka. And then last year, for some reason, the raspberry crop was amazing. And I think a lot of it had to do with that previous winter. My grandfather said, when you have a really, really cold winter, you're going to have an awesome raspberry crop.
Oh.
And not this past winter, but the winter before was very cold up in Eureka, and last summer the raspberries were amazing. And I've always noticed that when we have a super hard winter, raspberries do very well the next season.
Huh. All right. That's good to know. Our raspberries are kind of like, they are not doing anything this year. I've never seen them.
It was a mild winter.
It started out like gangbusters and then just fizzled into nothing. So what do you think your secret to the cabbages is? Because I always think cabbages are hard to grow. And, well, it's not as much that they're hard, but they're just like, you know, the bugs get them.
You know, I don't know exactly what it is, other than the fact that I think you have to, once those cabbages start forming, you've got to get rid of those larger leaves underneath so that air can get around the bottom of the plant. If the bottom of the plant starts getting too wet, and you know when rain falls, it falls into those crevices of those big leaves. You've got to get those out of there because that's what breeds the infestation of the bugs.
Okay.
That's all I can really say. We never really use pesticides of any kind.
Cool, I like
cabbages.
That.
Mm-hmm. But I just think that keeping that soil just moist enough for production but not too wet is kind of a big factor in keeping those cabbages healthy.
Okay. Oh, I like that. I'll have to try those tips. Okay. Excellent. All right. How about the best gardening advice you have ever received?
Start small. Mm-hmm. Don't try to plant everything. Start with things that you know you're going to eat the most, mm-hmm. and focus on those. And if necessary, if you're a new gardener, I wouldn't even start with a garden plot. I would start with some pots, mm-hmm. and see how you like doing gardening in a pot first. It's easy to handle. The weeding is way easier. You can kind of watch the process happen a little easier in a pot. But then start small. I've seen people who said, I'm going to garden this year. I think that's a great idea. And they dig up their whole back lawn and try to plant an acre garden the first time. And then they realize, wow, that was a little bit too much. And then they get discouraged, and then they don't garden anymore, and that's kind of sad. Mm-hmm. So I would say start small. Start with crops that you know will grow well in your area, and if you don't know what that is, ask somebody. Don't be afraid to ask, because that's how you learn.
Mm-hmm. And I found everybody loves to share their knowledge and help you be successful. So... cool. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? If you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
I have a hand tool that is about a foot long, and it has a dual top. It has like a little mini hole on one side at the top, and then it has a three-tine rake on the other. And I use that for everything. I use it for weeding. I use it for transplanting. And when we moved to Butte, I lost track of that tool for a while. Oh, and I panicked because I could not find one like it anywhere to replace it. But then we did find it after we unpacked some boxes. And it has a very special place out in my garden where it hangs. Yes, I'm very much like that hand tool.
I like that. You know, I haven't talked about tools at all. I worked at the Governor's Mansion in New York, like my very first year out of college out here when I was like 21 or 22 or something. I went home for the summer and got this job landscaping at the Governor's Mansion on Long Island somewhere. And we would oil the tools each night. We would actually wipe them down with oil and oil the handles. And we just took such good care of those tools. But it was really nice. And it really got me in the habit of, you know, keeping track of my tools still to this day, like, you know, taking care of them. And I think it's true. Once you get attached to a tool that you, and I would have a hard time. When I answered this question, my very first thought was a shovel. I couldn't live without a shovel, but then I decided that my answer would be a wheelbarrow. If I had to go somewhere, I think I would want a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
And I figured a wheelbarrow would be a lot harder to replace than a shovel, where a shovel, you know, you can
That's true.
get pretty
My
easy,
husband
but.
bought me a new wheelbarrow this spring
Did he?
because our other wheelbarrow, the one we had in Eureka, we accidentally backed over it with one of our vehicles one day. And we bent it back into shape, and it never really sat straight after that, but we used that, and then we ended up selling. Somebody bought it from us when we moved.
Oh,
they wanted it to fix it. So he bought me a new one from Ace Hardware, so it's still shiny and red.
Cool. Yeah, we finally, I think that's part of my thing is, like, we had a couple of years there where we had a flat on ours that we just couldn't, like, we'd blow it up, and every time you went out there, it just, you know, had a hole, and it would, you know, was out of air, and then we finally got a new one, and now we have one that, like, it's called, like, a no-flat tire. Like, it can't go flat. It doesn't have air in it or something. So I'm pretty excited about that. But to me, like, that's the power horse in our garden. You know, it moves rocks, it moves dirt, it moves compost, it moves grass, it moves pots, it moves plants, it moves. To me, the wheelbarrow is a pretty big tool. But I don't know. I'm like, you know, I'm like you. There's also, like, my little hand shovel that I plant everything with that's just about to get out. Mike keeps telling me, you better go put your, you know, where your flowers going to go and get them, you know, out there. You know, it's time to get them in the ground. And
Right.
And then there's also, like, I have like a little hand, I don't know what you call it, like a little trowel, not a trowel, it's like got three prongs, but just, you know, that I use for weeding all the time, and just,
right.
I don't know, you just kind of get attached to your tools, don't you?
I guess it's crazy.
All right, so the next question, eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time, which my friend Lisa was like, that's not even a complete sentence, Jack. But I asked that question because I always have a tough time. Like, it seems like I'll go down there to get lettuce and I'll bring up two huge, giant baskets full of lettuce. Like, and it's never enough to take to somebody, or if it does, by the time I pick it, wash it, it's, like, already soggy, or, you know, you don't want to bring people dirt. I don't know. Like, do you have any tips for eating or harvesting stuff on time before it goes bad?
Well, I'm a true believer that you should eat it in season because that's when it's the most nutritious.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully you have neighbors that like fresh vegetables too. You know, I'm a big proponent of freezing. Of course, you know, you can't really freeze lettuce, but mm-hmm. I just say I've never learned to can. My mother will always can the vegetables, but I never really liked the canned
mm-hmm.
taste of vegetables. I much preferred the, you know, freezing them. So I've learned, you know, how to blanch vegetables and freeze them.
Mm-hmm.
I think this kind of goes back to this whole thing of what's abundant? What is abundance in our life? Does abundance mean that we have to grow more than we can consume? Is just enough for us to consume and share with our neighbors? I know people who grow very large gardens that they grow so much that they have no way to distribute it, you know, to take it to market.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of finding that happy balance of, you know, what is the purpose of my vegetable garden? Is it for my family? Is it for me and my neighbors? Am I going to make a little business out of it and become a marketer of fresh vegetables? So I'm sounding a little philosophical, but it does kind of go back to that, I think. And, you know, if you are going to have more vegetables than you can consume immediately, is freezing or canning an option? And do you have the wherewithal to do that? So that's really not a good answer, but it's actually more questions.
No, I like that. It's a good thing to think about that. And, you know, like this girl, Megan Keane, that I talked a lot about being a strategic gardener. And she really, you know, nails that about, you know, think about what you're growing. You know, you don't want to waste time. Gardening is a lot of work and it's very rewarding work. But, you know, you don't want to waste that energy. And, you know, there's plenty of things you can do in your garden to enjoy it. So, you know, think about, are you going to grow? Do you like cauliflower? If you don't really like cauliflower, you don't maybe necessarily need to grow cauliflower, or, like, you know, planning
right.
how much you're going to grow of certain things and, you know, thinking about what are you going to do with them. Which is, yeah, is for sure good points.
And when I first started gardening, when I first had land, mm-hmm. you know, when we moved to Montana, it was the first time we had any abundance of land. We kind of went hog wild and mm-hmm. took on a little bit more than we should have. And that's exactly what happened. We were growing things that we didn't even necessarily like for the sake of growing them. And we had to sit and reevaluate that. I really like where I'm at right now in gardening because the plot is small. There's two of us that eat off of it. And I'm more about zone gardening where I have a little bit and see how it goes. And I can always replant if I have to. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like I have to fill in this large space with stuff. And it kind of goes back to our life philosophy. We've just minimalized our possessions so much over the last 10 years that I think our garden reflects that too. We live a very simple life, try not to accumulate a lot of earthly goods, and I think our garden kind of reflects that too.
Oh, I like all that. So the one thing about canned vegetables that I really love, like I was saying, is I just opened like a can of pickles. Like, to me, opening pickled beets or pickled, you know, cucumbers in the middle of winter, there's nothing like that to me. But yeah, I know canning can be, you kind of lose a little flavor there sometimes. But how about secrets?
I would miss is pickles.
Uh-huh. Do you make pickles at all?
If I can, I would make pickles, yeah. Mm-hmm. I usually make refrigerator pickles in a crock.
Oh, uh-huh.
And they'll last for quite a long time. I make them in, like, old ice cream buckets.
Oh.
And they'll last, but not as long as a canned pickle, though.
Mm-hmm. Those sound good, though. How about secrets for preserving food or making it last at all? Like, anything about freezing, blanching, like a secret to blanching or anything that you do special or... Want to tell us about the cool?
Well, there's a lot of information on the internet about freezing vegetables, or your mm-hmm. local extension office can provide mm-hmm. you with information. It's a very easy process. I think the secret is that once you blanch your food, is to drain it well so you don't have excess liquid in it before you pack your freezer bags or containers, because the water is what'll destroy the flavor over time. As far as fresh produce, I think it's really important, and some people will disagree with me, don't overwash food before you put it in the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rinsing it off lightly, but I don't overwash anything that goes in my vegetable bins. Mm-hmm. Now, I have two vegetable bins in my refrigerator, and then I picked up a vegetable bin that it just sits kind of open on one of the shelves, because most of my fridge is full of vegetables, so I needed mm-hmm. more bins. But I don't overwash things before I actually want to prepare them for a meal. Mm-hmm. I think by washing them, it kind of takes away some of the plant's resistance mm-hmm. to staying fresh. And then if you have produce in the fridge, to make sure that you're taking off any dead foliage or dead stems or leaves, because that'll start to take away from the plant too.
Oh,
but,
okay.
Yeah.
How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
My favorite recipe is to do like a wilted green salad. I like to use like a hot oil and vinegar dressing and red onion with the greens. If you're carnivore, you can add some bacon or ham, or if you're vegetarian, some soy bacon bits. And you toss that together, and you put some cold sliced boiled eggs on it, and you toss that all, and that just makes a wonderful meal. And I can't wait, because my spinach is just about ready to pick.
Yep, ours is too. Actually, it desperately needs, and Mike even had some that already bolted that he had to just pull out. But we got
big
leaves that I picked some, just was eating down. If I was like, why don't we have a basket down here? Because I knew I wasn't going to make it back down there. And but I just ate a bunch while I was watering. Yeah, some of our leaves, I mean, our garden, it seems like it grows, some things are growing like 3 inches a day, it looks like, down there with this rain these last couple of days and stuff.
Right.
How about a favorite internet resource? Anywhere you
I just discovered
for?
This site recently,
Ooh,
and it's
okay.
called EarthEasy.com.
Okay.
EarthEasy.com. And it's basically a page full of links on sustainable living. Most of them are type of gardening links. Very practical things like how to build a trestle for your pole beans and how to know what type of soil you have and just very practical and how-to links. EarthEasy.com.
Cool. I like that. How to know what soil you have. That's a good one. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine or a blog or anything?
For the last few years, my daughter has wanted me to give her a gift subscription at Christmas to this old house magazine.
Oh.
And she says, Mom, it's a fantastic magazine. So I started getting it myself, and they usually have something in every month on gardening. And
okay.
they have great pictures and how-to things, so... if you can get some old issues of This Old House, it's a great little magazine.
Cool. All right, here's the final question. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel, Shelley, is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to either regards to the environment, either in your local area or a national or global scale?
My husband and I recently are participating in a project here that the Butte Chamber of Commerce sponsors. It's called Adopt a Lot. And they take some critical areas of town that have historically had trash and litter problems, and you can adopt an area that you will keep clean for, you know, a period of time, say the summertime. And we decided that we would adopt a 12-block area in our neighborhood.
Wow.
And I was astounded. I was astounded at the amount of trash that we picked up initially this spring in this 12-block area. Two large black garbage cans full.
Wow.
And now the program actually ended, you know, on Memorial Day officially.
Oh. Uh-huh.
We wanted everybody to pick up for the springtime before summer came. But we mm-hmm. go out and walk and pick every week. And seriously, we still pick up one large kitchen bag of garbage every week.
Wow. So where's it coming from? Just like the wind
people throwing things out their windows. A lot of it is probably coming out of pickup truck beds.
Oh.
A lot of beer bottles. People after bar time are coming down here and throwing bottles out.
Mm-hmm.
The wind is probably a contributing factor. But I would like to see everybody who walks take a garbage bag with them
mm-hmm.
and pick up the garbage they see on their walk. And I think if everybody who would go out and walk and do that, that would be an enormous improvement on the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to actually suggest, this as a project in our city, see if this can be an ongoing project. Because, you know, garbage comes out anytime. It's not just in the springtime.
No. Yes.
So, and it's amazing what's out there. It really is.
I was just thinking a 12-block area sounded like a large amount of space. Like 12 city blocks? That sounds like a large area.
From my house, it's 6 blocks north of my house and 6 blocks south. Along one street. It's
yeah,
not like
that still sounds like a
block. It's a mile.
Like a
it's basically a mile,
oh.
you know.
Uh-huh. I guess that's not bad.
So, yeah.
All right, well, good for you guys. I like that idea, for sure. And, yeah, it's always sad to me when people are throwing litter out, like, on purpose or something, or when you see that. And beer bottle, of course, the booze thing is always trouble.
Yeah.
But, well, good for you guys. How about an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Well, I'd like to address this specifically to women. You know, in world cultures, women and the earth are deeply connected. Mm-hmm. Women have always had a special connection to the earth because the earth is the bearer of life. Everything that we grow comes from the earth. Women are bearer of life through the womb. And gardening feeds us women spiritually. There's something about kneeling in the dirt and having your hands in it that contributes a deep connection to womanhood. So for the you women out there, this is a really special hobby you can take on. And it will give you some peace because there's probably others in your household who don't want a garden. And it's your escape route.
That's classic.
Now when things get too tough in the house, you can always go out to the garden.
Maybe that's why my mom spent so much time in the garden. I might have to rethink my whole childhood. All right. Well, on that note, Shelley, thank you for being such a knowledgeable guest today and sharing such wonderful bits of information and tips to make our gardens grow stronger and more successfully. And just, I really liked everything you shared with us. So,
thank you for this project that you and Mike are doing too. I've had an opportunity to watch several of your podcasts now, and I learned something from every one of them. So I wish both of you the best of luck in this venture and happy gardening to both of you.
Aw, thanks, Shelley. Yeah, it's getting way more, you know, downloads than I ever expected. It's doing so much. So people must like it. And I think part of it is just the, you know, ordinary people sharing different knowledge and helping people say, wow, well, if they're doing it, I can do it too. And,
right,
and just
exactly.
These little tidbits. And, you know, hopefully, I think I figured out I've interviewed people in 16 different states already in just 50 episodes and two other countries, Canada
that's
and
right.
Australia. And hopefully we can, you know, keep spreading it so that there's some, you know, knowledge from everywhere coming out. And, you know, it's kind of like talking to your neighbor. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, Jackie Beyer here, host of the Organic Gardener Podcast. I just wanted to encourage everyone, if you haven't already signed up for our 2015 Gardening Challenge, to go ahead and do it. We'll probably keep it open through the end of June and then probably close it down about July 1st. Surely everybody will have everything in the garden by then. I know I'm always looking at the nurseries for flowers to still plant petunias and things by them, but you know, that's me. They're almost always sold out. So think about what vegetable, what fruit, what flower do you want to plant enough of for a whole season? And we're just saying like 2 or 3 months. You know, do you want enough carrots to feed your kids or enough broccoli to, you know, feed your household for the summer or enough apples on a fruit tree? What would you plant that would feed your household for one season this year? We're just going one short season, 2-3 months. If you pick lettuce, I think if you planted it now, you'd still have enough for a good 2 months. So think, you know, are we going to eat a salad every night? How many heads of lettuce? What would that cost us? And then, you know, are you going to buy a pack of seeds? And then get it in the ground and let us know. I got an even easier Gmail account. So it's just orgpodcast@gmail.com. ORG for organic, orgpodcast@gmail.com. You can email me. You can go to our website. I think you can even go to the organicgardenerpodcast.com now. But just in case, awesomemontana.com will get you there. AWESOMEMONTANA. That's just my website with, you know, it's got my artist links and some other things up there. And then go to Mike's Green Garden, the Organic Gardener Podcast, right on top. It should say 2015 Garden Challenge. So go to the awesomemontana.com website or email me at orgpodcast@gmail.com. orgpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us, you know, just your first name or username. How many people are in your household? What fruit, vegetable, or flower are you going to grow? like, what part of the country do you live in, you know? Are you, what state? Or are you out of the state, somewhere else in another country? How cool would that be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Any feedback about the podcast? I'm so glad you enjoy it. The downloads are just amazing. Everybody's comments have been so supportive. I just can't thank you enough. So have a great day. Jackie Byer here, signing off. Let's get growing.